Sports bettors, Circa Sports now presents Palm Saturdays with Circa's Vice President of Operations, Mike Palm. Live from Bar Canada at the D from downtown Las Vegas. Here on 104.3 The Score. And watch live on YouTube and Twitch. Featuring the latest and the greatest of the sports betting landscape from coast to coast, along with some great guests. Here he is, Mike Palm.
That's right, everybody. The Score is now live from 8 to 9 every Saturday morning with Palm Saturdays. I'm Mike Palm, coming to you from Bar Canada right here in downtown Las Vegas. Big show on tap today. We'll take you all the way up to David Haw and Bruce Levine inside the clubhouse in about 20 minutes. Tina Nguyen from Fox 32 right there in Chicago is going to join us. She'll talk where the Bears going to end up. They're still going to be the Chicago Bears, or God forbid, could they really be the Hammond Bears? I'll get her thoughts on the Bulls. Very interesting situation we have with the Bulls. Now 9 of 10, losers straight up, 10 of 11 against the spread. Are the Bulls a good bet against here? She recently sat down with Connor Bedard for an exclusive interview. I want to get her thoughts on Bedard, and she was in Arizona for spring training. So a lot to cover with Tina. That comes up in our second segment. Off the top here, I wanted to talk about Olympic hockey, and boy, has this not disappointed. I have to tell you, if you could rate this at a scale of 1 to 10, it's probably a 12. How exciting both the men and the women's hockey has been over there in Milan. And I'm going to start out on the women's side because we talked about it. This is the third edition of the show. We've talked about it at length both weeks, the betting opportunity that was there to be had on the American women and what a dominant run-up they had had coming into the Olympics. Of course, every time there's an Olympics on the women's side in hockey, Canada and the USA plays this series of games. This year, the women won that series 4-0, but essentially, the average score of each game was 6-1, and the closest game was 4-1. So they had been completely dominant over Canada, and Canada towers above the rest of the field. Now, we did give you the winner in Sweden in Group B in the women's side. That was free money at minus 235. But essentially, it's a two-horse race. Well, they met in the pool play in the women's side, and the American women dominated 5-0. What's fascinating here is the betting story behind the women's hockey team. A week before the Olympics started, you could bet the U.S. women to win gold minus 120. The day the women started, which was essentially the day the Olympics started, the women's hockey, they were around $1.35 to $1.50 in the market. The first time they met the Canadian women, and the Canadian center and best player was injured for that game, you could find the U.S. women in the market anywhere from $1.65 to $1.75. Now you fast forward a week to the gold medal game. Canada's at full strength, and yet this number closed on Thursday. The U.S. women minus 475. For those of you that are not familiar with betting, that means you have to bet $475 to win $100. Bet $475, get back $575. On the Canadian side of it, you could bet $100 and win $340. So they were huge, huge overwhelming favorites. How does the line move from 175 to 475 over the course of the week? And the Canadian women were more healthy. So essentially, all things being the same, the line should have been shorter. Now, a friend of mine that lives in the Chicago area who's been a what they call that, a P1 here, an early adapter of the show and has listened both weeks, said, do you think you moved the line, talking about the American women constantly? Certainly I don't. I'm not that immodest to think that I could have. Maybe does it move it in a small way? Not $3. Does it move it from $1.75 to $4.75? In the game, the Canadian women dominated. Absolutely dominated this game. If you watched all the American women's games, they were out shooting teams by 30 shots on goal a game. You would look up, the shots are 52-10. One game, 51-6, right? Halfway through this game, the American women only had 12 shots on goal. A scoreless first period. Canada scores shorthanded. Only the second goal that Frankel, the American goalie, had given up the entire Olympics. And by the way, she was 38-1 for for MVP before the Olympics started. She didn't win it. Pretty tough. You only give up two goals the whole time. And I know she did split time. She played about 60% of the minutes in net for the Americans. It gets down to the final 2.5 minutes. Canada's minus $8 in game. That's how big of a favorite they were. America pulls Frankel, scores on a tip, sends it to overtime, and wins and beats the Canadians about 3.5 minutes into the 3-on-3 overtime. I think the lessons we learn here, not only from a betting perspective, but the burden of being a heavy, heavy favorite and how hard that is on teams. As a $1.75 favorite against the Canadians in pool play, they went out there and proved why they were that kind of a favorite. Now you're a $4.75 favorite, and if you lose, it will be one of the biggest upsets in history. I argue you rank it right up there with The Miracle on Ice, and yet another documentary comes out about that summer of 1980. So on the women's side, for my concern, I mean, if the American women don't win the gold medal match, I don't know how I have a profitable first quarter in betting. That's how invested we got with them. On the men's side, here we go. We got the final everybody wanted tomorrow morning. It's going to be USA and Canada. The quarterfinal matchups on Wednesday, stunning. Other than Germany, no showing the early game. Every other game went to overtime. Canada had a rally to force overtime before they won it in overtime, the betting favorites. And then in the semifinals, Canada finds himself down 2-0 to Finland before scoring to tie in the third and then scoring with 30 seconds to go, and yet Bennington had to make one more save. And so they'll make the American men who dominated Slovakia on that side of it. Here's another interesting tale of following along. You're listening to Palm Saturdays here on 104.3. The Score, brought to you by Circus Sports Illinois. A Canadian men a month before the tournament were plus 130. As the tournament started, plus $1.15. After the first round of games, you could have still got them at minus 105. Heading into the quarterfinal matchups, they had gotten all the way up to $1.35. And now, after the two near scares that they had, Canada opens as $1.20 to $1.25 favorite in the market over the American men. American men certainly with the momentum and the confidence of how well they played in their semifinal match against Slovakia, although you could make the argument, and if you're looking at betting the bronze medal match as well. Finland is a team. All their players are NHL players. You cannot say that about any other team besides the United States and Canada. All right, let's switch gears to college basketball. The University of Illinois, we talked about them last week as well, and Bruce Underwood's, Brad Underwood's concern about the new officials you're seeing in the Big Ten. Well, they went out midweek and absolutely crushed USC. This is that trip for the Midwest teams that they take, and they play UCLA and USC back-to-back. But a dominating performance midweek. Covered the number on Sunday against Indiana in Champaign, and then go out midweek and absolutely throttle as a nine, I think it closed 9.5-point favorite at USC in Los Angeles on Wednesday, 101-65. So now, Illinois sitting, you know, looking at it right now, essentially a two seed, I think, in a lot of people's bracketology, sitting at 22-5. They take on UCLA, who has just gotten crushed twice on their trip to the Midwest, at Michigan and at Michigan State. One of the most entertaining stories in sports right now is Mick Cronin, the head coach of UCLA, and his devolvement into madness, I would say. And he's always been a fiery guy. I mean, many of you will remember him from his time at Cincinnati, and you can talk about the post-game pressers when Chris Mack was at Xavier, current coach at Louisville now, and Cronin was at Cincinnati. We could have gone all the way far that back. But I said, let's just go back and trace this Mick Cronin and the way he's been. Because people, he went viral at the game in Michigan State. We'll get to that at the end as we look at this chronologically. Let's just go back the last 13 or 14 months at some of his bizarre post-game press conferences. Okay? So let's go back to January 8th. January 8th, less than 14 months ago, 2025, they got stomped by Michigan. Not much unlike what happened here here last weekend. They got absolutely, that last Saturday in the early time start game, they got stomped by Michigan. Let's listen to the sound from the post-game presser after that loss. January 8th, 2025.
But we don't play soft. So don't tell me you want to win. Like, just don't tell me you want to win. So don't tell me you want to win. It's crazy, you know. And it's every day. I'm tired of it. It's every day. I have the most energy of all the, of anybody at practice every day. I'm upset with everybody in that locker room, my assistant coaches and my players. I mean, I don't need to do anything else. I almost got 500 wins. I'm only 53. I mean, it's a joke. It's a joke. But yet I come in and I have more passion and energy and pride than everybody in. That's the problem. So what the truth of it has been, it's really hard to coach people that are delusional. The hungry dog gets the bone. We got guys that think they're way better than they are. They're nice kids. They're completely delusional about who they are.
We only need to now fast forward 9 days later. After a win against Iowa. Now, let's give you the backstory to this. Ever since Cronin comes to UCLA, he's complaining about when they get in the Big Ten, the ridiculous travel. And it is ridiculous travel. I mean, it's coast to coast now, this Big Ten. But complaining about how much of a disadvantage UCLA is at and the West Coast teams are at playing in the Big Ten and how they have to travel. They beat Iowa, and a reporter's going to ask him a question about how big of a factor was the travel for Iowa. Let's listen to this sound, January 17th, 2025.
Have you seen anything from the teams that have to come out here and stay out here? Is there any kind of balance with that in terms of the wear and tear and just what you've seen on the court?
Wear and tear on them?
Yeah.
Is that a joke? Please tell me that's a joke.
Is it even comparable is essentially
comparable.
What I'm trying to say.
Have you ever looked at the NBA stats and what the gamblers and all those people do on West versus East? Talk to Eric Musselman. Ask him that question, who coached in the NBA. Good luck, West going East. Okay? And ask me UCLA's record east of the Mississippi in the last 20 years. Because when I got the job, I looked it up for scheduling purposes. It's under 500. Okay? We have to go back four times. Oh, the Big Ten teams get to come to Los Angeles where it's 70 degrees one time a year. They don't even have to switch hotels. We're in the same, we're 12 miles apart. Are you kidding me? Please tell me you're kidding me. Is this a plant? Is this a planted question? I mean, you cannot be serious with that. And meanwhile, we've seen the Eiffel Tower, or we've seen the Statue of Liberty twice in the last 3 weeks while we were landing. We also saw the Capitol building. I mean, you kidding me? I mean, you can't possibly, and we still got to go back. And then we got to go back for the Big Ten tournament. You can't possibly be serious.
He's stealing my line from my VSiN segment from Macro. You cannot be serious. All right, we'll give a break. We're going to go forward to January of this year. I watched this game. It was a great game. I think they're 14-1 at home this year, UCLA. Their only loss, a double overtime loss to Indiana. Obviously, he's frustrated, but he was in full Napoleon Dynamite mode. Well, listen, January 31st this year.
Defense was awful all night. We deserved to lose. We went through a stretch where we were pouting and letting one shot affect the next shot. We couldn't score for a long time. That's how we got down 10, missing wide open shot after wide open shot because we act like somebody stole our favorite toy and we're a three-year-old. Our defense was awful all night for the most part.
The defense on the last inbound.
Our defense was awful all night. We went over that play five times yesterday at the end of practice. Five times last night and five times this morning. We showed that play on film 10 times in the last 2 days. Of course, my staff told me it was our ball. I just watched it. It sure looked like it was off Indiana's elbow.
I mean, did you get an explanation for that last call?
Did it look like I did? What would the explanation be? It's Indiana's ball. What are you asking?
Who it went off of?
Who the hell cares? Who it went off of? Indiana or UCLA? They clearly said it went off us.
you know, the defense was pretty solid in the first.
They said, I said, everybody here on our video says it's our ball.
The defense for the first 10 minutes was pretty solid.
Our defense was bad all night.
Points.
Trent's,
they missed shots. That doesn't mean it's good defense.
Now we go to Tuesday, where all of a sudden everybody said, what's wrong with Mick Cronin? His center, Jamerson, commits a foul on a breakaway. They're down 25 with 4 minutes to go. They're going to review it for flagrant. Don't worry about it. He sends the kid to the locker room. He upgrades it himself to the flagrant, too. I texted my friend at the under 12 timeout Tuesday night, who's a professional gambler, Napoleon Dynamite, that's what we call Cronin. He can't wait for the he wants to get to the postgame presser already. All right, he throws his own kid out, and now the Michigan State student section is cheering for a former Spartan that now plays for the Bruins. And the poor guy, I don't know who the guy is that asked this question in this interview after the game Tuesday night. It might be a reporter for the student newspaper in East. I have no idea. But Cronin was just waiting for it. Let's go to the sound. This is from Tuesday night in East Lansing.
True toughness is on how you compete and how you go to work every day. Steve's a good kid. He made a bad decision. But if you want to be a tough guy, you need to do it during the game for a block out for a rebound. So I was thoroughly disappointed. Guy was defenseless in the air. I know Steve was trying to block the shot, but the game's a 25-point game. You don't do that. So.
What was your thought to the student section chanting Booker's name?
I could give a rat's ass about the other team's student section.
I just meant the overall, the way that you
I would like to give you a kudos for the worst question I've ever been asked.
Did you like
should take it.
The preparation of the...
Do you really think I care about the other
team's student section? No, I don't think you care about the other
team. Are you raising your voice at me?
No, I'm just...
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. Come on, dude.
No reason.
Come on, but yes, you were. Everybody's standing here listening to you. Everybody. This is on camera. They can hear you. I answered the question. I could give a rat's ass about the other team's student section. I coach UCLA. I don't care about Michigan State students. I mean, who cares?
Is Mick Cronin trying to get fired? Does he want to buy out money? Jerome Tang was not trying to get fired at Kansas State. Believe me, wasn't. And then, bad move. Their AD says, we're not going to pay him. We fire him for cause. He caused embarrassment to the program. What did he say? We're not competing. We're going to practice at 6 a.m. tomorrow. Cronin, what's his problem with the media? How are his players going to react today? I don't think well. Now, he came out and apologized to Jamerson and said, I shouldn't publicly put him on blast by doing that. I want to send a message. I could have handled it. I don't know. Illinois is playing awfully well right now. They've got healthy. This game's a 6.5-point line. You know what we should do? I think Fox 32 is the home of the Illini. Let's ask Tina Nguyen when we come back from the break who she likes today, UCLA at Illinois. It's Palm Saturdays right here on The Score.
We're back with more Palm Saturdays, starring Circa's Vice President of Operations, Mike Palm, live from Bar Canada at the D from downtown Las Vegas. Presented by Circa Sports. Sports betting the way it should be with no bet fees on 104.3 The Score.
Welcome back into Palm Saturdays here on The Score. We're with you right up until the end of the hour, when everyone tuning in, I'm sure right now, did so because they're extreme fans of Inside the Clubhouse with David Haw and Bruce Levine. You know, we were doing an event, Circa was, at Wrigleyville Dogs. Last May, it was a Cubs and Reds game, and in conjunction with Marquee and The Score, we put on this event, and I was talking to someone, and I happened to gaze across the lot there, and this very attractive young lady walked in, and I had two thoughts. First, is she lost? And second is, don't I know her? And in fact, I did. It was Tina Nguyen, who all of you know from Fox 32 there in Chicago, but I recognized her because she spent a couple years at Channel 13 ABC here in Las Vegas covering sports. We got a chance to talk and have remained in close contact since, and I thank her because right now, via the Circus Sports Hotline, we bring in to Palm Saturdays Tina Nguyen. Good morning, Tina. How are you?
Hi, Mike. How are you? Thanks for having me on. I'm so excited to join you for the next few minutes. Yeah, was it the Vegas connection? Hello. The Chicago connection, man. Having lived in both cities now, I realize somehow all roads either lead to Chicago or Las Vegas in some way, shape, or form. So excited to be with you here on Saturday morning.
Well, a lot to cover, but let's pay off the tees right away. You guys covered the Ally and I on Channel 32.
Yeah.
Impressive opening performance in the trip to L.A., and now they'll finish off the second half of it tonight against crazy man Mick Cronin's UCLA Bruins. Ally and I laying 6.5 here in this game. Tina, how do you see it?
Yeah, I mean, I think when it comes to Illinois, especially them getting Kylan Boswell back, I think that's been huge for them. I got the chance to actually talk with Kylan one-on-one, a kid who's born and raised in Champaign, Illinois. So obviously it's really special for him to get the chance to play for them and, of course, for Brad Underwood as well. I mean, Brad Underwood says he is one of the best, if not, like, even in the Big Ten, the best two-way player here in the country. And you look at this Illini team, obviously they can shoot, right? And when it comes to rebounding, I asked him about, you know, that's been a huge emphasis for them in practice from Brad Underwood. But defensively, Kylan Boswell gives them such a boost here. And so I just think tonight, like, right, they play UCLA, I think, you know, especially after losing back-to-back games a few weeks ago, without having him, I think getting him back has been a huge boost. But the big one, obviously, I think will be Michigan, number one Michigan on Friday, which that game is also on Fox 32. But, I mean, they're wrapping up this West Coast trip here, and I legit think that Illinois got a good chance to be a Final Four team. And I even asked Kylan about it. You know, when it comes to this point in the season, obviously March Madness is around the corner. You know, how do you block out some of the noise and stay focused and finish stronger? And he literally told me, I mean, it's already been a conversation at practice. Like, Brad Underwood is already preparing us for this March Madness mindset here. So it was great to talk to him one-on-one. And, yeah, the game tonight is on Fox 32. And then we'll have a post-game show as well. And you can hear, the full conversation with Kylan there on Fox as well. That is what we call a little tease, Mike, as you know, a little teeny tease here.
I have no formal training, Tina. I'm just learning. You can catch Tina, of course, on Chicago Sports tonight. Good Day Chicago and Bears Game Day Live. You had a tremendous season, and that team created so much excitement in town. But the top story in Chicago right now is, will the Bears still be the Chicago Bears, or is this serious about them actually going to the state of Indiana? Could we see the Hammond Bears? How serious do you take it right now?
Well, I think having been in Las Vegas for the whole saga with the A's, one thing that taught me is there's a lot of back and forth, right? And, you know, one position trying to get leverage and all that jazz. And for me personally, I won't believe it until I see a shovel in the ground, whether it be in Indiana or whether it be in Arlington Heights. I think the main thing to keep in mind with all of this is it is so fluid here. And the fact of the matter is, like, obviously, you know, for people who have gone to games at Soldier Field, it's no secret that it does need some upgrades, the modern infrastructure. And, you know, for me personally, having been to the Raiders Stadium there in Las Vegas, obviously, and just, you know, SoFi Stadium as well, you know, compared to other NFL stadiums, one of the things that makes Soldier Field so unique is, of course, how historic it is, right? But at the same time, it does need some upgrades. But I think bottom line is there's going to be a ton of back and forth throughout this whole process. And for me personally, it is hard to imagine. Again, I'm not from Chicago, but just what I've experienced so far and talking to the viewers and the fans at the games and all that stuff, like, it's that's one of the reasons as to what makes going to a Bears game so unique and special is that it is right there on the lakefront. So it's a little hard for me to imagine the Bears playing anywhere else, but at the same time, you know, the fact of the matter is, like, it does need some upgrades, and when you look at the other stadiums that have gotten it as well, too.
You know, it was the morning, let's switch subjects, Tina, to the Bulls, because I think they're... from a betting perspective, I think they're very interesting. It was the morning of January 26th, I think we were texting. The Bulls had just won in Minnesota. They'd won four in a row, and they had won in Minnesota, and they had beat the Celtics in Chicago, and they were playing the Lakers at the United Center.
Yeah.
And they were 23-22. There was some excitement about the team. Obviously, the trade deadline was coming up ahead of time. Were they finally going to make some moves? They lose that game to the Lakers. Essentially, from that morning, they've been 1-10, but also 1-10 against the spread. And they're not even coming close to covering these games. They're missing covering the games by 9 points. That's in addition to the spread, to the points they're getting in these games. And it didn't change after the break against Toronto, catching 4.5. They lose by 9. Essentially, this is a team that's like in the second week of preseason. It's all new parts. They got a bunch of guards, not much of a front court. You got a bunch of second round picks. I know the people are disappointed in the Bulls right now. Not just the media folks in Chicago, but the fans as well. But is this a good opportunity to fade this team the rest of the way?
I mean, I think when you look at the Bulls, especially what they did after the trade deadline, it's clear. It is, I would say, obviously a rebuilding mode, but I also feel like to an extent, there is a lack of direction with the team. And you look at, like, if you want to tank along with the other 9 teams in the NBA that's also wanting to tank and all that jazz, they're in a bit of an uncomfortable position, Mike, because they decided to do this too late. Like, they've won too many games to truly tank. But at the same time, you look at their roster. Jaden Ivey did not play the other day. And obviously, he even said it himself, he's not the same Jaden Ivey as when he first started in the league with the injuries and all that stuff, too. I have said this before on our show. If you are a team that has a young player that needs a change in scenery, that needs to reset a little bit, that needs to develop, who do you call? Try calling the Chicago Bulls here. Because you look at the roster right now, a ton of guards still, obviously. So many guards that, you know, those guys are, in a sense, fighting for playing time. And when you put into context some of the contract situations that they're in, too, they lack size. And look at the upcoming schedule. Right now, they've lost 7 straight, as you just said, 1-10. But they've got the Pistons tonight. And the Pistons have certainly been a shocker to a lot of people. And the job that J.B. Bickerstaff has been doing there as well really turned things around pretty quickly. And then they play the Knicks tomorrow as well. Charlotte, I think, obviously hops over them when it comes to the play-in tournament, all that stuff, too. I mean, this is a team right now. Obviously, AK's not going to come out and fully say it in a rebuilding mode, but to me, I still feel like they lack this truly sense of direction, because if you wanted to tank, well, it's certainly too late. You've won too many games, especially earlier on in the season, and now you've put in yourself in this roster. And I think, too, going a little further, when it comes to some of these guys that need to develop, like Amadis Bouzelis, second year in the NBA, obviously his rookie season, firstly, he shocked me as, you know, because I saw him in Las Vegas, speaking of Vegas, I saw him in Las Vegas playing for Jason Hart and the G League Ignite team there that doesn't exist in Vegas anymore. But seeing him go from that to year one in the NBA obviously took massive step forwards, and for him personally too, when it comes to development, he was really learning truly how the NBA works. But you look at this second season, you know, for some of these young players being on a team like this, I think it really hurts their development as well. That's the one of my concerns, like long-term wise too, with the team, is when you have so many young players, right, and your organization's in this kind of uncomfortable position where you truly don't know which direction you're going, it can really stunt the growth of some of these players.
You're listening to Palm Saturdays here on 104.3 The Score, and we are talking with Tina Nguyen from Fox 32 in Chicago, a Texas A&M graduate, proud Aggie. By the way, Texas A&M, 13 players at the NFL Combine, more than any other school. Tina, you're a very good reporter, and I really like when you're able to do the long-form interviews. I think you excel at that. You recently got a chance to sit down with Connor Bedard. Now, I tell you, we have a relationship with the Blackhawks, and we get opportunities to talk to their executives quite often. And it's not popular for me to say that Macklin Celebrini is on a whole different level than Bedard. I get a lot of angst out of those comments. But I say it for a couple of reasons. One, I think Celebrini is much more of a two-way player. Two, I don't think Bedard's going to grow anymore. I think he's stuck at a generous 5'10". And three, I don't think that he possesses the charisma that Macklin Celebrini does. Watching these Olympics, I think Celebrini is going to dominate the NHL for 10 years. I mean, that's the overall thought I get from watching the men's hockey. Tell me, what surprised you most about the hour plus you sat down with Bedard?
Well, I think you gotta like look at the context. At the end of the day, like he's 20 years old, and this is a kid who is like used to kind of being in this spotlight where, you know, he's been told for a lot of his life so far that how great of a hockey player he is, and he's obviously, when it comes to being who he is, the player he is, Connor Bedard. I mean, I think personally, one of the things, I got the chance to talk to him too at the beginning of the season, and he took me through, gave me some good, great details about what he worked on in the off season. One of the things was just skating faster, right? The speed in the NHL. But another thing is like really getting used to the NHL schedule and how to take care of your body properly and all that jazz. And obviously, the Hawks right now are still in a rebuilding mode, but I think the guy that they got, Jeff Blashill, in year one so far, everything I've heard about him has been really good. And I think one of the reasons why they hired Jeff Blashill is when it comes to the development of some of these players, they needed someone that knows how to develop young guys. And obviously this roster, still young, Connor Bedard, year three in the NHL. Again, he's 20 years old. I will say, though, if you ask him, if you talk to him about some fantasy football, he loves fantasy football, so that's always a treat to talk with him about. But I think, I know, obviously, I think someone who's still young in his career, and when you look at where the organization is at, right, Jeff Blashill and the staff's really pushing this this team forward when it comes to the developmental piece of it all, too. Obviously, it's going to take some time. And for Bedard, I think specifically, the 13 games, I believe, that he missed when he got that kind of freak accident on December 12th against St. Louis on the faceoff play there, that obviously kind of, before the injury, he really factored into nearly half of this team's goal, whether it was actually scoring or when it came to the assist. He is a player that, when it comes to offensively, he really does get things going for them. And so, again, I think someone, a young player, still trying to figure it out, but I think he's got the right group of the coaching staff around him. And obviously, too, he told me this, going from year one to year three, I mean, this is obviously a younger team too, right? So when it comes to that, they're bonding a little bit more. It's a bit looser in the locker room for him as well. But I mean, again, he's 20 years old. you just know. One of the cool things I think about being on this side of covering these players, it's like, especially like even PCA, when I was out there for spring training, right? You cover these guys from like when they make it into the big leagues, when they get that moment, and then they continue to evolve and grow. Obviously, I think that's what's going to happen with Connor Bedard. I think we'll continue to see more of the comfortability, the personality come out more too, because he is in the locker room laughing, joking with the guys and the young guys as well. He sits next to Nick Foligno, right? So sometimes I see a little bit of that friendly banter as well, but obviously still a young player. I will say, though, when I watched him talk with Wayne Gretzky on TNT, obviously that's a legend. You see more of the personality. So it is there. You just got to give it some time, Mike.
Well, he loves fantasy football and PCA. That's got to make Dennis Savard feel good. Jeff Blashill, Tina, you know what Jeff Blashill will be known for? He went to become John Cooper's top assistant in Tampa Bay for three years. They got beat. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got beat in the first round all 3 years. He was the only guy that could hold the Lightning back. He's back to Chicago. The Lightning will be the one seed in the East. All right, speaking of long forward interviews, let's close with this. You were in Arizona for spring training. We're going to talk about the Cubs a lot going forward. I mean, I grew up a Cubs fan, so I'm naturally going to talk. I don't want to hear people say we slight the White Sox, but naturally I will talk about the Cubs a lot more than the White Sox. So you were in Arizona for both. Give us your thoughts on the White Sox, what to expect out of the White Sox this season, and where they're at on the path to becoming relevant again.
Yeah, well, I certainly think they are on the right path. And I got the chance to talk with their director of hitting, Ryan Fuller. He's in his second season here. And Fuller was someone I really wanted to talk to because Colson Montgomery, when he got sent down to Arizona of May of last year to work on his swing and to just really get him back into form, he mentioned how Ryan Fuller was someone that was really played an instrumental role in helping him get back to who he is. And I think what I gauged from that conversation, Will Venable, Chris Getz, certainly do have the right guys in place here to move this franchise, to move this team forward. Obviously, a lot of young guys still. When it comes to Colson Montgomery, Kyle Teal, Edgar Caro, I think Chris Getz, too, has done a good job throughout the offseason when it comes to adding some of those veteran guys as well on some of those shorter deals, of course. But the big, obviously, offseason name and surprise as well has been adding Munetaka Murakami. Oh, my goodness, Mike. When I got the chance to just observe, he's working with Phil Nevin at first base, and he's taking some ground balls, and they're kind of working on his hip and how it was turning and everything. But, I mean, that's someone, and I asked Fuller, back home in Japan, he is one of the most, like, prolific hitters to come out of Japan. Holds, I believe, the single-season record for home runs, 56 homers. He's going to add a ton of power to this White Sox lineup. And another layer to that, too, is it was so fat when he was taking live BP, it was so fascinating, too, to see the players, his teammates around him. I mean, they're so curious about, you know, his diet, his regimen, his workouts, and his swing and all this stuff. It's almost, he's like a unicorn to them. But it's always so the storyline to follow with baseball season when it comes to some of these guys that come from the NPB to the MLB, right? It's just simply how do they adjust? And Fuller was telling me how back in Japan, they'll see a ton of splitters because that's what they'll mainly throw. But here, obviously in the MLB, they're seeing five different pitches night in and night out. Obviously, the velocity plays a huge role in that as well. So it's going to be interesting to monitor and see how Mune is his nickname, how he adjusts here to Major League Baseball. The other fascinating thing, too, is obviously here in America, they have technology, different bats, different balls, right, that can really help Mune. Just they call it exposure therapy, where they can expose him a little bit earlier and kind of get him used to seeing the spin and all that stuff. So when he is seeing it in real time, he can make some of those adjustments. White Sox have lost 324 games the last three seasons. I'm going to say that this year, they do not lose more than 100 games. I really do think Will Venable and his staff, he's in year two here as the manager, I think really has them going in the right direction. And I think more importantly, year one, the team was able to form an identity, lay down a foundation. Will Venable, I think, was able to bring in a culture, really help this team and the young players, multiple of these guys that called up to the big leagues, they got a taste of what it was like to win. So I think they're going in the right direction for sure. As for the Cubs, obviously, I was in Milwaukee when they lost, I believe, that game five. They got bounced in the NLDS, obviously, to the Brewers there. And I remember in the clubhouse just, obviously, it is so emotional, but they really thought they had a chance to win that series and to advance. I think when it comes to, and I was talking to Jed Hoyer out there too at spring training, I think the concern for them was, okay, like, we do believe we had a chance at getting past Milwaukee. It's just the next round there, and especially when it came from a pitching perspective, because that starting rotation all year long was just banged up left and right. And then Shota Imanaga, someone they didn't even go to in that game five. That was a little concerning as well. But I remember how emotional and abrupt it felt in that clubhouse after that game. Now here we are in spring training. I was with the team last week. I mean, that loss still lingers. I talked to Matthew Boyd one-on-one. They still remember it. I talked to Craig Counsell as well. One of the things he mentioned to me was, obviously, it was a painful ending, but at the same time, that team and a lot of these guys as well still on this team, they got a chance to taste what it's like to experience postseason baseball, and it is addicting. I mean, when it's Wrigley Field and the stakes are that high, even for someone who's covering the team and just taking a step back, it's an incredible atmosphere. They want more of that. They're turning that disappointment into motivation. And when I was talking to Council 101, he was saying it is tough to be on a team like this, a team that is so well-rounded as well. And then, of course, they made some moves in the offseason as well. The big one, getting Alex Bregman, the three-time All-Star, two-time World Series champ, Gold Glove Glover as well. I know him, super familiar with him from the Astros, obviously. He brings in a ton of postseason experience. But I think what you're seeing with Alex Bregman, too, you always hear about him being a guy, a true student of the game. And talking with PCA, when he did his media availability, I think PCA is going to be a really interesting storyline to follow here for the Cubs, because obviously who he was before the All-Star break last season, right? You want him, I think, one of the main points with him is just being consistent. And when we asked him about Alex Bregman, you know, they've already been in conversations about his setup, his approach, and how he should attack, and his swing too. I think Alex not only will help you. I think what we saw with Kyle Tucker last year for the Cubs, obviously the injuries played a role into it as well. I think Bregman will bring more of that consistency too. I think having someone who is a right-handed hitter will give Craig Counsell flexibility in this lineup. But I think the impact you see with Bregman when it comes to some of these younger players like PCA, I think getting him will certainly pay dividends. And I just talked for a really long time. I'm so sorry, Mike.
Thank you for the filibuster, Senator Thurmond. And thank you for spending more than a few minutes with us. Tina Wendt from Fox 32 in Chicago. Appreciate the time, Tina. When we come back, we do have a few minutes left in this program. We'll take a look at the two big college basketball matchups of the day, Arizona, Houston, as well as Michigan versus Duke. And if we have time, a story about one of Tina's contemporaries, Australian sports reporter Danica Mason. It's Palm Saturdays here on The Score.
We're back with more Palm Saturdays, starring Circa's Vice President of Operations, Mike Palm, live from Bar Canada at the D from downtown Las Vegas. Presented by Circa Sports. Sports betting the way it should be, with no bet fees, on 104.3 The Score.
Welcome back into Palm Saturdays. Stick with us. Just 10 minutes away from inside the clubhouse with David Haugh and Bruce Levine. Bruce, of course, in Arizona, covering spring training. I talked about Danica Mason. This is a hilarious story. Her explanation's even better. She's an Australian sports reporter, as it turns out, very well respected. I mean, the Prime Minister came out in her defense. But she's over there in Italy covering the Olympics and was attempting to do a segment on their show in Australia where she did some highlights on the rugby back there. Let's listen to the sound.
Like, literally, the price of coffee over here is actually fine. It's more the price of coffee in the US that we are going to have to get used to. I'm not sure about the iguanas. Where are we going with that one? But anyway, let's get into today's sport because there is plenty happening back home. We're going to start off with some actual Brisbane Broncos gearing from the actually, their trip to the US, the UK rather, because Reece Walsh has stolen the show. He, of course, did that in the last year's Ashes series, crowning for four tries and claiming England's fans. But returned to the UK just 3 months following that UK club challenge.
Now, better than this is the reaction and her explanation. There's full support from everyone in Australia. Maybe she's terrific, and maybe it's the difference in culture a little bit. But she came out and said, you know, she made a mistake. She had a drink or two, really. But she misjudged how cold it was, the altitude, and that she hadn't eaten. I have to put this in my pocket. The next time that I may have had a few too many, and somebody calls me out on it, I'm going to say, look, I totally misjudged the altitude. Absolutely my fault. I have to look more about her. She must be tremendous because the whole country got behind her. Two huge games today in college basketball. We try to leave you with some actionable sports betting information here. Houston is in the Fertitta Center taking on Arizona. Big news here is no Koa Pete for the Wildcats. He's out two games. Lower body injury. Now they're reporting this like hockey. It's a calf injury. What's the extent of the calf injury? We have to know. I mean, if he comes back now after this game against Houston and he's not right, just take a big red marker or black mark, draw a line through Arizona. It's over. No, they're not. They're not even going to the Final Four. And I thought this was definitely one of the three or four teams that could cut down the nets this year. So monitor Koa Pete. Houston off no Pete, up to six today. I'd still lay it here in this spot. Arizona did not look good against BYU. Against him, didn't come close to covering that number. And then, you know, Texas Tech, while we're on this note, to draw a big line through them. The top in injury, I like this Texas Tech team. They've had several great games beating Arizona. No one was more efficient in the last 5 years against Calvin Sampson offensively than what they were against Houston this year. But no Toppin, Texas Tech, forget about them as well. And then number one versus number three, Michigan Wolverines taking on Duke. This game being played at Cap Center in Washington, D.C. Michigan a 2.5-point favorite in this game. But I think they're just on a whole nother level here, the Wolverines this year. All you Big Ten fans out there, of course, will remember Clark Kellogg and the spurt ability. This team, you're even with them, and they flip the switch and they're up 12, and they win by 20. No one has really shown that ability to do that and at that consistent level. Remember when Michigan came to Las Vegas earlier in the year, and they beat all of these top 10 teams, and they beat them all by 30 in these games that they were all a pick against. Well, they've been absolutely tremendous. They had Purdue, of course. Matt Painter said before the game at Mackey, if we're going to win the Big Ten, we have to win this game. No problem for Michigan. Another spurt, and boy, it was over. Mark this as an official pick as well. I think Duke is too one-player dependent with Boozer. And then we're going to play Illinois as well on the road, -6.5. Put those three in a money line parlay as well. Michigan, Illinois, and the Houston Cougars. Thanks for joining us this morning. Another fun Saturday morning here. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to all of you out there in Chicagoland. And stay tuned for Inside the Clubhouse with David Haw and Bruce Levine. It's 104.3 The Score.